morning, church. How are we? Let's respond there. Good? A little surprise there. Just wake you up in the morning. I am Luke Ashley. I'm the student pastor here at Genesis Metro Church. If you do not know me, if you don't, that's okay. Your kids probably do. My wife, Christine, and I, we pastor the 6th through the 12th grade students, middle school and high school. We've been here for about 3 years, and it's an honor to be up here with you this morning to fill in for my friend, my pastor, my mentor, Tim. Pastor Tim and Carrie are getting a few days of much needed, much deserved, and earned rest. And so if you will be praying for them that they can just get some rest and just enjoy some time together. They spend so much time, effort, and energy just pouring into our lives that it's great for them to have a moment where they can just get away. And so if you'll be praying for safety and just for enjoyment for them as well. And then also I want to encourage you and challenge you. They don't know I'm doing this. I might get yelled at in a couple days. I want you to just overflood their media, their Facebook, their Instagram with just pictures and comments and posts about how much you love and appreciate them. I think that will be fun, and you can blame me. It's okay, but I think it'll be fun. I think they will enjoy that, and so I want to encourage you to do that. This morning, though, you're stuck with me for the next few minutes, and so let's chat a little bit. I want to start by asking you a question. Have you ever made a mistake because you're tired? Have you ever made a mistake because you were exhausted? All parents, you should say yes to this immediately, right? Just consider the first 6 weeks of every one of your children's life, right? It's those 6 weeks where you were a complete zombie. You know what I'm talking about? You don't remember anything, okay? And the mistakes you make, how many times did you put the milk in the pantry instead of the fridge, right? Or how many times did you accidentally use the wrong ingredient? Right, like cinnamon instead of chili powder, it doesn't work. Ask my mom, she's over there. It's not a good substitute, right? Or you're in the shower, you forget to wash the shampoo out of your hair. Some of you are lucky like me, you don't have that issue, okay? But there was a day, right? And you make these little mistakes because you are so extremely tired. We were talking about this earlier this week and someone shared this story. And it's kind of like GM lore, I guess. It was a mission trip years and years and years ago. And someone on the trip, I don't think they even went to the church, they were on the trip with them, got so tired that instead of, in the morning, they made the mistake of using preparation H instead of toothpaste, okay? Yeah, you talk about a bad way to start the day. Yeah, it's all downhill from there, you know? There's just no recovering from that. But you think about the mistakes we make when we're tired, and we've all been there. Maybe not like Preparation H been there, you know, but we've been there before. And we've made those mistakes purely because we're exhausted or because we're frustrated. Just think, have you ever said something in one of those moments of just exhaustion and frustration where as soon as that phrase, as soon as those words leave your lips, you're immediately trying to pull them back in? It's like, wait, no, I didn't mean to. No, wait. And you know repercussions coming, right? Husbands, you know when you let that tongue slip to your wife, there's a repercussion coming, right? I mean, you know as soon as it leaves. Sometimes it's an action. Sometimes we get so caught up in the midst of frustration and exhaustion, we do something. And the second we do it, we know that was a mistake. We know we messed up. See, we can all relate to these moments because we've all gone through those phases of life. Some of us are stuck in it right now to where life is just seemingly kicking your tail. The punches are being thrown left and right. You can't counter, you can't block them, and you are tired this morning. You are tired, you are frustrated. Things at home just aren't going like you feel they should. Your marriage just isn't firing like it used to. Your kids just aren't listening like they should. They're not doing as well in school as you want them to. Work's not going the way you want it to. You're tired of pulling all the weight. You're tired of being the only one that communicates. And oftentimes, our big blow-ups come from just these small things stacking up one on top of another. A lack of communication at home or at work, and next thing you know it, there's just this explosion because you've had enough. The frustration of not feeling like you're being listened to by your kids. Sooner or later, parents, you just let go, right? You just let loose on them. And immediately thinking, maybe I shouldn't have gone that far. But we end up making these mistakes because we're tired, because we're exhausted. And because when we get in those moments, our guard lowers a little bit. When we reach those moments of exhaustion and frustration, you'll notice your guard lowers a little bit. You become a little more loose with your tongue. You become a little more loose with your action and your reaction to things. Because of this, and we're just going to dive right in this morning, we have to be careful. We have to learn to be careful when facing frustration and exhaustion. When I think about this, I think about Moses. We're going to look at the call of Joshua this morning, Joshua 1, 1 through 9. But we're going to backtrack to Moses first, because we have to see what Moses experienced and went through in order to really appreciate Joshua's call. And so you think of frustration and exhaustion and the mistakes we make in those moments, and you think of Moses. I think of Moses when he struck the rock with the staff. You think of everything that led up to that point. The constant day after day struggle of those people. From the moment he got to Egypt, being rejected and questioned by them. And then through the works of God, he brings them out of Egypt based on miracles alone, and they reach the Red Sea. And immediately again, there's doubt. And then again, through miracles from God, Moses parts the Red Sea. The people, millions, walk on dry land to safety. The sea crushes their enemy. And what do they continue to do? Doubt, complain. We're hungry, we're thirsty. I don't trust you, Moses. They revolt against his leadership. And yet he's the one day after day who's on his face pleading with God not to wipe out these people. And you think of the frustrations that piled up one after another. And then we find ourselves in Numbers 20. The people are complaining about being thirsty, and Moses and Aaron get on their face before God. And God says, go talk to the rock. I love that. That's God, right? Go speak to the rock, and from it will flow water. But Moses, overwhelmed, I assume, with frustration and exhaustion, calls the people before the rock, takes his staff, and strikes the rock twice in disobedience. He made a mistake. He allowed frustration and exhaustion to get the best of him. You think about the mistakes that we make, letting things stack up against us, one stone after another, and the next thing you know, something causes them to fall. And we are sitting there looking at the mistake that we've made and the repercussions of it. You see, at this moment, as Moses allowed his frustration and exhaustion to get the better of him, Moses' life then ended on the wrong side of the Jordan. This is where we see Moses' life end, on the wrong side of the Jordan. Moses and a generation of people were not allowed to cross to the promised land because they had departed from faith. It wasn't that Moses lived a bad life. At his death, God said that none had been like him, none would be before that was face to face with God. But he had made a mistake and had to suffer the repercussions of it. Where his life ended on the wrong side of the Jordan, we see our story of Joshua begin. And we see our story of Joshua begin. And as we read in just a moment, Joshua 1, you've got to consider all that Joshua has seen and experienced. All that the people, those about to enter across the Jordan into the promised land to fight battle after battle to obtain the promise of God, watched their parents, a generation, perish because of their lack of faith. Joshua watched his mentor, a man he loved, a man that he followed side by side. He was the only one on the mountain with Moses when he encountered the presence of God. He was the only one standing next to Moses as Moses delivered his last message at the end of Deuteronomy. He was with Moses constantly, and he saw the victories, he saw the mistakes, and he watched his friend, his mentor, perish on the wrong side of the Jordan because of his mistakes, because he was not careful in the midst of frustration and exhaustion. And with that being the cloud over him, we see his call in Joshua 1. Starting in verse 2, actually, he says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, and all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Verse 6, be strong and courageous, for you shall cause the people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers. Verse 7, only be strong and courageous, being careful. Are you seeing the pattern here? Being careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to your right or to your left, that you may have good success wherever you go. Verse 8, the book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night. Here it is again, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you'll have good success. He closes with verse 9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. In the midst of his mentor's departure, in the midst of the mistakes made because of frustration and exhaustion, a generation, the next leader, are urged to be careful. Let that sink in as it would have with them. Considering what they just saw, considering the generation of their elders who were not allowed to proceed into the promised land. And God's call is not just a reminder of his promise to be with them and to be strong and courageous. It's an urgent warning to be careful. Be careful. Hold on to the law. Do not turn from it to your right or to your left. Meditate on this day and night. Be careful. Your success is dependent on this. Be careful. When you consider all that was seen, this call to be careful had to strike a chord, did it not? And when we look at everything around us, when we look at our lives, when we look at the lives of our parents, of our friends, of our families, I think we have to consider this call as well, to be careful. We have to be careful when we face frustration and exhaustion along the journey, but we also have to know the direction. We also must know the direction that God's taking us on. We also need to know the direction, the path that he's pushing us down. Just consider what this crossing meant to this generation, what getting to cross the Jordan meant to the people. This was the starting of a new day, the dawn of a new era. This was them getting to write their own chapter. A generation of children were about to go further than their parents ever could. Just think on that. All of us who claim that we are victims of our environment, those of us who claim we can't do something because our parents never were able to. Well, you know, my dad struggled with alcohol. I will too. It's genetic. You know, I'm fourth generation divorced. Last October, I got to perform my childhood friend's wedding. And it was a beautiful moment for me because he lived with us for months at a time. And part of that was because he had watched his mom and his dad and his stepdad all go through multiple divorces. And I remember having conversations with him. I remember talking to him on the eve of my wedding, and he just sitting there bewildered, thinking, I could never do that. Refusing to consider it because of what he had witnessed in the past. See, here's the thing we've got to re-understand. We often restrict our progress based on the limits of our past. We often restrict what we can do based on what the people who have gone before us weren't able to. But you have to understand, your direction doesn't have to be defined by their mistakes. Your direction and the distance you can go is not defined by the mistakes of your parents. It's not defined by the mistakes you made when you were a dumb teenager. Because weren't we all teenagers? You're dumb. It's okay. Face it. You'll learn later on your parents are right, okay? Because we're all in that position as adults. Unwillingly sometimes. Man, they were right. And we will never admit that, right? Mom, close your ears. I didn't say that. But you consider this. Your direction is not defined by them. You can choose differently. Joshua chose differently. Joshua didn't have to choose to make the same mistakes that Moses did. And there was some character traits that he had that helped him choose differently. One of them was loyalty. It wasn't that Moses wasn't loyal, but Joshua was loyal. Joshua stood by his leader. When the numbers, when the multitude, when a nation that had been led out of captivity by this man turned against him, Joshua stood next to him. You know why he stood next to his leader? Because he was loyal to his God. He was loyal to the God who had called Moses. And so he was loyal to Moses. His loyalty pushed him further than where his mentor was able to go. And he was also teachable. He was also teachable. And he was teachable because he kept in close proximity to Moses. And when Moses called the first elders, Joshua was there with him. And the elders and Moses went upon a hill, and the cloud of the Spirit came over them. And Joshua looked at Moses and said, "Moses, will you not stop this?" Moses said, "No." He said, "Are you jealous on my behalf? Because these people are experiencing the presence of God?" He said, "No, I won't stop this. Oh, that everyone would experience this." Joshua, in his extreme loyalty, was trying to protect the leadership and the relationship that Moses had with God. But Moses took that opportunity to teach him and help him understand this is available to all. Oh, that everyone would experience this, Joshua. He was teachable. He was in proximity to his leader. He was courageous. He had endurance to finish the race. And he was flexible. He was flexible. When you consider the day they left Egypt to the day the battles were done and that generation had obtained the promise. You not think that there were some detours? You not think that the path changed a couple times? That they were taken in a long road? Come on, they went in a circle for like 40 years in the desert, okay? Do you not think that requires flexibility? He was flexible. You see, we often try to complicate the direction of God. But here's the reality. God's direction is simple. Because when it comes to your life, when it comes to your marriage, when it comes to your kids, when it comes to community, when it comes to the kingdom, God's direction is always forward. God's direction is always to progress forward. It is never to retreat. When you consider your marriage, God's direction for your marriage is always progression. It is always moving forward. When you struggle with your wayward children, the direction is never abandonment. It is always to push forward. Now, there are consequences sometimes. Remember, Moses did not go to the promised land. But I assure you, he's in heaven. But the direction with your children is never to retreat. It is always to push forward. God's direction is always to move forward. The only complication to God's direction is our doubt. The only thing that constrains and complicates God's direction in our life is our personal doubt. The struggle that we have of thinking we know better. I have a 4-year-old daughter, and at 4 years old, she's already a backseat driver. I kid you not. This isn't like a pastoral illustration where I'm gonna like go outside of the bounds of reality, okay? No, this is legit, okay? As we drive to anywhere, we go to the mall, sadly, a lot, okay? I'll take her to school. We go to church. These places that I drive constantly, she will be in the back seat where she can't even see the road. And as she's looking out the side windows, she'll start questioning. I'm not even exaggerating. She'll start questioning. "Daddy, have we gone this way before? I don't think this is the right way. Daddy, are you sure you know how to get there? I think we should have turned back there." I got so frustrated one day. I stopped at a red light, I turned around, I said, "Bella Grace," I said, "do you not think Dad knows where he's going?" I said, "have I been to the mall before?" "Yes." Do you think I know how to get there?
Yes. I said, baby, then let me drive. Is that not us?
Are we not the four-year-old in the backseat who can't even see over the steering wheel trying to direct God? Because it doesn't look familiar or it's not what we expected? Listen to me. Just because the path you're on doesn't look familiar does not mean God is lost. Just because you don't get it doesn't mean he's still trying to figure it out. Face the reality that he knows better than you. He gets the big picture. He's already written the story. He knows how it ends. Let him drive. Sit down, shut your mouth, and follow. Because there's those moments that he looks back at you, the moments that he looked back at the Israelites in the desert as they cried, oh, that we were back in Egypt, craving the comfort of their slavery because they didn't know the path they were traveling. You can just see God cringing, let me drive. Just trust that I know what I'm doing. We must know the direction, and the direction is always forward. Because it's about following God. It's about what God can do, what he will do, what he has done. You look in all these verses, from verse 2, verse 3 to verse 9, there's only two verses where God doesn't mention himself. Throughout this whole passage, he says, I have given you this. I have promised you this. I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you. I have sworn this to their fathers. I have commanded you to be strong and courageous. I will be with you wherever you go. I will. I have. It was never about Joshua finding a way. It was about him having faith in the way. About just believing that God knows what he's doing. And following that. God does not force our hand in victory. He does not force us into progression. It's a choice we make. But when we are willing to make it, he's there to lead us. But we have to know the direction, and we have to believe in the destination. I can assure you the Israelites did not believe in the destination. Because if they fully believed in what lied ahead, they would have known that the walk was worth the wait. That they would have known that the reward was worth it. They would have known that what they would have obtained was better than what they left. But instead, they cried out in the desert, oh, that we were still in Egypt. We have to believe in the destination. And here's why. Look at the verbiage in verse 6. He calls to Joshua, be strong and courageous, for you shall cause the people to inherit. I want you to look at that responsibility. He says, be careful, Joshua. Be strong, be courageous. Why? Because this is on you. You will cause the people to inherit. Is that not the picture of Christ? Because of Joshua's resilience, the people were able to cross into the promised land. But because of the resilience of Christ, we are able to cross into salvation. We were able to tread through the waters of death into life eternal because of Jesus' faithfulness to finish it on the cross for us. His actions caused our salvation. It gave us the opportunity. He looks at Joshua and says, for you shall cause the people to inherit. Dads, single moms, couples sitting together with children, listen to me. Your direction leads to your family's destination. The direction you choose points your family to their destination. As fathers, it is on us to lead our home. And the direction we choose, the actions that we take, I feel confident to look at you with the same words and say, be careful, because you will cause. Again, they have their choice. They can choose a different path than you, but why create them with a handicap? Why make them have to start here instead of leading them here? Scripture tells us to raise a child, teach a child in the way that they shall go, and they will not depart from it. Fathers, single moms, parents, we will direct and point our families towards their destination. Personally, you choose it. Some of you, as individuals, there's a Jordan you need to cross. For some of you, it's doubt, confusion that's keeping you from crossing the Jordan into salvation. For some of you, it's struggle with an addiction, with a problem, with a hindrance, some of which you possibly blame your past. And it's time to cross the Jordan. Some of you, your family is sitting there, and it's up to you to lead them across the Jordan. It's up to you to take their hand, carry them if you have to, and lead them to the destination that God has planned for them. Church, we have to understand that there are over 100,000 people sitting out in the city of Frisco who need someone to lead them across the Jordan. You could be the cause for them to discover Christ. Your actions, your decisions, the way you live could be the cause that they need. But it's your choice. It's our choice. We can either choose to waver in the wilderness or progress towards the promise. God does not force your hand to victory, but he will clear the way when you're willing. But we have to make the choice. The choice to cross is ours. But I love the language in verse 3. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you. Not I will give, not I will figure it out. I have given you. It's already there. The land was already there. The people just had to walk. Salvation is already there. Jesus has died. He's off the cross. He's risen. He stands in glory with his Father in heaven. All you have to do is believe. The promise is already there. The promise is not potential. It's already prepared. We just have to walk. And we can all walk. If you can't walk, you can roll. If you can't roll, we will carry you. As a church, as a community, we will carry you if we need to help you get across your Jordan. And your victories need to be shared, because the story of your victory could be the inspiration of someone else's crossing. The story of the victory of your marriage could be the inspiration someone needs to fix theirs. The story of your children and their turnaround, whether it was at age 12 or 22, could be the inspiration they need to keep going. But you got to believe in the destination, because it's a journey worth finishing. But in order to finish well, you got to believe in the destination, and you got to live for the destination. See, a lot of times we're like this. You take the eternity of time, never ending, no beginning, it just continues. And then you take that one day that we came out slimy, weird looking, screaming, we have our birth, and then a fairly short time later, our death. And in retrospect, you have this. In comparison, a fraction of what there is. See, eternity is not the choice. It's how and where you spend eternity. But many of us, we follow the trap of this distance. That this is what we live for. that I want to save as much as I can here, so when things get tight, God, I'll get you next week. I want to be happy here. I remember seeing a billboard years ago in downtown Dallas that said, life's short, get a divorce. Are you kidding me? Just because it's hard and I don't want to mess up this fraction of time, I'll just choose a different way. Whatever's more comfortable, whatever's easier for me. If you're all about the easy life, I promise you Christianity is not for you. But if you're about something that matters. Someone once wrote that the greatest use of time is spent on something that will outlast it. What are you living for? Are you living for the destination? Or are you stuck in the situation? What are you living for? It's a decision you have to know. It's a decision you have to make. Will I waver in the wilderness, or will I progress towards the promise? Will I take hold of what God has already prepared for me? See, church, it's time that we focus on the promise of tomorrow. It's time that we begin to believe in and live for the destination that God has prepared for us. And that we begin to lead our homes, lead our families, and lead our community in the right direction. Forward. Never retreating, always progressing. And we're only able to do so if we believe in and live for the promise. Because when you believe in what exists tomorrow, it makes the struggle of the situation today meaningless. I want to close with Hebrews. Because today, God is calling us as a church and as a body, those of you who are beat up and tired this morning, to be strong and courageous and to be careful. And I consider the charge in Hebrews 10, starting in verse 35. He says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. Do not throw away your confidence of the promise tomorrow, because the reward is great. What you will experience on this side, on the other side, is worth it. Do not cast aside that confidence, for you have need of endurance. Can I get an amen to that? For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay, but my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Church, listen to 39. And let this be our charge this morning. But we are not of those who shrink back. We are not of those who shrink back and destroyed. We will be marriages who push forward, who wrap our arms around a ridiculous reconciliation for the purpose of progressing our relationship with our spouse. We are not of those who shrink back when our children push back. We are not those who shrink back from community when life gets hard. Because the moment you stop expecting your children and the church to be perfect, you can start loving and living with them where they are. We are not of those who shrink back. Why? Because we believe in the destination. We believe that what waits on the other side of the Jordan is worth the walk. That it's worth the risk. That no matter who comes and who goes, no matter what is said and what is done, no matter what punches are thrown, I stand firm in the foundation of my God, because he stood firm for me. Because when the moment and the option came that Jesus could have turned around from the cross, he said, whatever your will is, it be done. And he stood on the cross, paying the price so that we could receive our promise. He was faithful to us. He did not shrink back. And in turn, church, we take heed of the call of Joshua to be strong and courageous, to be careful, because our God is with us. He has gone before us. He will never leave us nor forsake us.
no matter the world throws at us, our promise stands firm. So as a church, we stand. We stand and we look at the face of adversity and say, whatever you want to do to me, do it to me, because it's well with me. Why? Because I believe in the destination. I believe in the promise that lies in tomorrow. Church, stand and sing this with us tonight.